Community Matters, solutions to local issues and leaders who are making a positive difference.
Good morning, it's Megan from the morning show on Your Encouraging WPER. Welcome to another edition of Community Matters. Today we have another couple interviews to share with you. So to start things off, we are going to be speaking with Simon Viney, Cybersecurity Financial Services Sector Lead from BAE Systems Applied Intelligence. And he's going to be talking about a new report which shows that banks and consumers have some pretty strong concerns over cyber criminals and specifically how much of a threat we are facing each and every day. So without further ado, here's the interview with Simon of BAE Systems. Simon, welcome to the program. I'm excited to have the chance to talk with you today.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for making the time.
Simon, what sort of trends are you seeing in the work that you're doing?
From BAE Systems work, you know, across the world with banks and insurers, we see, you know, emerging collaboration between different groups of criminals across the landscape of organized and serious crime. So, you know, fraudsters are seeking to exploit the fear, uncertainty and change that the COVID pandemic has unfortunately brought about.
Now, how prevalent is this problem in our society? Like, are we looking at a significant amount of people being targeted by those online scams?
Absolutely. So in terms of individual consumers, our survey recently we've just published has shown that 38% of consumers have been a victim of cybercrime or online fraud in the past year alone. If you look at financial institutions, you know, banks and insurers, three quarters of those say they've seen a rise in cybercrime.
How much of this do you think is actually due to the pandemic? Like, because people are spending more time online, spending more time at home, is that a cause and effect situation?
In part, yes, absolutely. You know, three quarters of banks and insurers again are, you know, they're concerned that the amount of pandemic related to cybercrime that will still come in the next 12 months, and you know, it's particularly where the changes to ways of working, you know, additional remote infrastructure for organizations, people doing, you know, everything online, no longer visiting, you know, shops in person, buying online, etc. People have, unfortunately, you know, those opportunities for fraudsters to exploit that have increased.
Can I also ask you, just as we're talking about cyber crime today, is there a definition within which that fits? Like, are we talking about phishing scams through email, or are we talking about legitimate credit cards being misused by other people?
So it will be things like, as you said, phishing, the fraudulent text messages, spoof text messages, or social media messages people receive, direct attacks against organizations, people seeking to take over your personal email, or, you know, all types of attacks like that.
Okay, so really then all inclusive.
It won't necessarily pick up your cloning of a credit card in a retail shop, for example.
Okay, perfect. So pretty much all inclusive then. It's all kind of under the umbrella of cybercrime. Can I ask you then, just from the research that you've done, what is the confidence level that Americans have in their banks to protect them from stuff like this? I've only ever had to be like a prey victim to this once, and every bit of it was refunded. So I had confidence there. But I'm wondering how much people just assume that their banks are going to be the ones protecting them and guarding them against this.
Yes. So perhaps one of the more interesting results of the survey was that actually about one in five of the US banks and insurers, insurance companies, are not confident about protecting their customers from cybercrime. So, you know, in a way, yeah, about 20% of, you know, banks and insurers not being confident, that's quite eye-opening. It just shows actually the scale and, the depth of the problem that, you know, they don't necessarily feel they can tackle it all by themselves.
So I guess that's good then for somebody who has maybe high confidence in their bank. That gives them an opportunity to rethink that confidence. What are some things that they can do to protect themselves? What are some measures that we as consumers can take to protect our own identities online?
So one of the key messages really is don't share information, personal data, or your financial details to unsolicited messages. And the fraudsters are very good at making it sound as if they are the legitimate bank or insurer or telecommunications, you know, your phone provider talking to you, your utility providers, etc. Be wary of any situation where people are either asking you to make a payment that you shouldn't be right, or people are saying you need to protect your money and do something to make, you know, protect your banking account. A genuine business will never do that. One of the key messages that we always emphasize is give yourselves time to stop, think, and then act. The fraudsters want to pressurize you to not give yourself a chance to actually realize there is something, you know, fraudulent going on. So give yourself that time.
I love what you mentioned just a moment ago, and I'd love to kind of just bring that out a little bit, that that the scammers, they're very good at making themselves sound legitimate. So we're not necessarily looking at things that will be full of typos or full of all these things. Like, you could be in a situation where you're looking at something that's very sophisticated. Are there any warning signs that you would say people can be on the lookout for that might help them sort of figure out whether or not they're facing a scam?
So, yes, these are professional businesses. They, you know, they run in a very professional and sophisticated way, unfortunately. I say businesses, you know, criminal businesses. The key message really, as I said, don't give out information that, unsolicited. Normally, these messages come into you untargeted. Or even if they have some of your information, don't respond and give them back more. Always contact the provider that you know via a separate route directly yourself. Don't ever respond back to the direct message, a phone call, a text message, whatever it might be, that you receive, because that just means you're communicating to the fraudster. If you have concerns about your account or, you know, dealing with, say, one of the parcel delivery companies and they're saying they have something for you, find out their contact details yourself and contact them that way. Don't just respond directly back to the message.
So then, just to provide you with an example, just to walk through this one, I shop on Amazon on the regular, frequent Amazon shopper. And whenever they're having an issue with a shipment or something, they're always contacting me through the app or through email. So when I got a text message the other day, that is not usually the way that they reach out to me. Would that be sort of a flag? This may not actually be Amazon?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, if you have a legitimate app on your phone and you receive a message that's within that app, yes, you should be able to have a good degree of, you know, trust in that. But if you suddenly get an email or as you said, a text message that still says it's coming from, you know, Amazon in that case, yes, be suspicious, because that you cannot trust the provenance of that.
And then the way around that would just be to go to Amazon directly rather than clicking on the link they provide to see if there really is an issue with an order.
Absolutely. Or go to your account directly via the app or, you know, as you said, you know, without clicking on the link that they've provided.
When things like this happen, whether we feel like we're being targeted for a scam or we've actually already fallen victim to a scam, where would you recommend we report that to?
So people can report information to the Federal Trade Commission in terms of activities there. The FBI obviously do help investigate cybercrime as well. Individual banks and insurers, where they're being targeted and it's their brand being impacted, you can also report to them because they can take measures to warn, you know, their other customers as well.
For anyone who has questions about cybercrime, anything that we've talked about today, things to look out for, trends to look out for and be aware of, anywhere that they can go for advice and information?
So for consumers, the ready.gov/cybersecurity website has a wealth of information for individuals as to how they can protect their online identities, their passwords, etc. Equally, as I said, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, they provide lots of useful information on ongoing scams and fraud, etc.
Perfect. Thank you. And then, Simon, I know that our time is growing to a close here, but is there anything else that you have not had a chance to speak to yet that you want to make sure is covered in this interview?
So, that key message around people giving themselves a chance to stop and think as to whether they are being conned is one really the key message consumers need to take away from this. From a business perspective, it's very much the case of organizations need to make sure that they understand all of the systems, the IT systems that they have, and that they, you know, maintain those in a secure manner. The degree of technology change makes that an ongoing battle, but it's something all organizations need to do.
Perfect. Simon, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. I am excited to be able to share this with our listening audience.
No, thank you very much for your time.
For our next interview, we are shifting focus over to healthcare and specifically how the American Rescue Plan has extended access to healthcare.gov enrollment. So millions now have access to the newly expanded financial assistance. And today we are speaking with Daryl Means. He's the regional administrator at CMS. He's the executive leader responsible for overseeing the Medicare and Medicaid programs, agency initiatives, business and partnership development, and outreach and education throughout the Northwest region. Daryl, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm glad to have the chance to talk with you today.
Well, thank you, Megan. It's great to be here. We certainly appreciate you allowing CMS time on your show.
Our pleasure. Now, I understand that there is a special enrollment period happening right now for the health insurance marketplace. Could you explain for those maybe who don't know what that is, what the special enrollment period is all about?
Absolutely. The American Rescue Plan provides greatly improved financial assistance. And to get that to people, there's a special enrollment period so that they can go out to healthcare.gov and search for a plan that fits their needs, which can lower people's premiums significantly. For instance, 4 out of 5 people currently enrolled can find plans of $10 or a month or less after the newly expanded financial assistance. And also many premiums will decrease on the average of $50 per person per month.
That could be quite a significant savings for a family. That's incredible. Can I ask you, who should be taking advantage of this special enrollment period? Like, who's the target audience for something like this?
Well, Megan, anyone looking for health insurance at this time can take this opportunity to look for coverage and see if they qualify for financial assistance. They won't need to provide any qualifying event paperwork or anything like that. Traditionally, when we had special enrollment periods, you had to show that you had a loss of job or the birth of a child. But under this special enrollment period, none of that is needed. So I encourage people to go to healthcare.gov now and see what they qualify for and select the plan. If they do, then they will have their plan start 1 May.
Now, I have had the opportunity to actually go to healthcare.gov to look at some various plans, just out of curiosity to see what was there. But I would imagine that there's a lot of listeners who've never even visited the website, so may not even know what this financial assistance available to them is. Could you unpack that a little bit? What are they looking at as an opportunity?
Well, that depends. It depends on each individual and what they qualify for. But if they go into healthcare.gov and start their application, then all of this information will be made available to them, and then they can find out what they qualify for, and then they can select the plans that best meet their financial needs.
And how long is this special enrollment period open for?
The special enrollment period opens through August 15th. But again, I don't encourage people to wait that long.
Sure.
Because if they do, obviously they may not be insured during that time if they don't have insurance, but also they can be taken advantage of these financial assistance and the expanded assistance now.
For those who may feel overwhelmed at the prospect of navigating all of these different plans, maybe don't even know what they're looking at, what information they're looking at, are there places that they can go for help?
Absolutely. Whether they're new to healthcare.gov or if they previously enrolled in health coverage through healthcare.gov, we want to make sure that Americans who want coverage through the marketplace have a seamless shopping experience. Therefore, customers wanting help filling out their application can call the marketplace call center at 1-800-318-2596. Let me say that number once again, 1-800-318-2596. And what they'll find is that there's assistance available in 150 languages, and the marketplace call center is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so they can do it at a time that best suits them.
Now, I understand that the American Rescue Plan has actually had an impact on this, I want to say on the special enrollment period, but just in general, the access that people have to healthcare. What's that connection there? What is the American Rescue Plan doing for those who are seeking healthcare through healthcare.gov?
Well, it's making available the opportunity to go in and find affordable health care insurance. As you may know, many people who are impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic may have lost their jobs or been furloughed. And with that, they may have lost their health insurance or maybe could not afford the package that they had, the insurance that they had. Therefore, at this time, they can get into healthcare.gov and find a health plan that meets their financial needs. And as I said earlier, many people will save on the average of $50 a month going in there. And some people find plans as low as $10 a month. So it's important that people understand that as a result of COVID-19, the pandemic, this special enrollment period is available to help them.
For someone who already has health insurance through that marketplace, do they need to come back and update their information during this time?
We recommend, Megan, that they go back in and they look, because some of the financial assistance currently available to them was not available maybe when they enrolled during the open enrollment period last year. Therefore, if they go in and update their application, they can take advantage of the new financial assistance and save now. So again, I encourage people, whether they have it or not, if they've been into the marketplace before, to go back into the marketplace and see what they qualify for and get the savings that's available through this special enrollment period.
Perfect. And this may not, there may not be anything for this in this conversation, and if so, that's okay. But I'm curious to ask, with the experience that you've had in overseeing Medicare and Medicaid programs, is there anything that participants in Medicare and Medicaid should also know about this, about healthcare.gov, about the special enrollment period, anything specific to those plan members?
Well, it's important to understand, one, Medicare, people who are on Medicare are beneficiaries who are on Medicare, do not go into the marketplace for health care.
Okay.
There are plans in there that are there to assist folks, so they may qualify for their state's Medicaid program. And in that case, they may even be able to find a plan if they qualify for it for $0. So it's important, again, that people, even if they're not sure, if they're not already on Medicare, but they should go into the marketplace and see how they can save.
Fantastic. And then I know that our time is short, so if I could just have you one more time reiterate where people can go for information. I believe you gave out a website and a phone number. That would be great to hear that again.
Absolutely, Megan. If people are interested in assistance, they can call the Marketplace Call Center at 1-800-318-2596, or they can go to healthcare.gov. And if they're looking for assistance on the healthcare.gov website, if they want local assistance, they can click on the tab at the bottom of the page that says Find Local Help, and that will introduce them to information about local assisters or agents or brokers that are qualified to help them in their area.
Perfect. Well, Daryl, thank you so much for your time today. This is great information, and I'm excited to be able to share it with our audience.
Well, Megan, it's a blessing to be here today with you, and we certainly appreciate all that you do, and thank you for having us on your show.
It's our pleasure. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye. And that concludes another edition of Community Matters. Thank you once again for hanging with us today. And of course, if you'd like to hear audio from any of these interviews again, you can do so right on our website, WPER.org. Have a great day.